This episode today is brought to you in partnership with Emergen. Emergen, the global digital business firm, helps some of the world's most respected businesses develop their most promising ideas into valuable digital products and customer experiences faster. For more information, visit emergen.com. That's EMERGN.com. The insurance industry is the backbone of the economy. It's the reason we're able to take risks, and it's the force that helps put us all back together when disaster strikes. So in this podcast, I'll be spending some quality time with key CEOs and industry leaders to ask them how certain world events can impact the insurance industry and how the insurance industry is impacting the world. We'll also be talking about how they rose to the C-suite. It seems like no one grows up yearning for an insurance career, but here we are. I'm Meg Green, managing editor of the online insurance magazine Insider Engage, and this is CEO Perspectives. Insurers face the challenge of trying to price a product often before they know the final cost. The whole idea of insurance is to pull risk together, to spread the risk enough so that when they lose money in one area, they're able to make it up in others, either through writing other profitable business or through investment income. But sometimes insurers just get it wrong. Despite it being a heavily regulated industry, sometimes insurers lose so much money that the entire company fails. With approval from regulators and courts, failed insurers can be rebuilt. Our next guest, Claude LeBlanc, has done this twice. He turned around XL Capital's former financial guarantee company, which was renamed Syncora in 2008. More recently, he spent the last 6 years reinventing Ambac Financial Group, which was the second largest U.S. bond insurer before suffering huge losses on defaulted mortgages and filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 2010. I spoke with Claude because I wanted to know what motivated him to take the helm of troubled companies and what skills he sees as vital to turn them around. Thanks, Claude, so much for taking the time to speak with us. I'd like to kind of start at the beginning, which is, could you tell us where you're from? Where did you grow up?
Sure. I was born in Canada and grew up in Toronto.
And what did your parents do?
My mother was a registered nurse, and throughout her career, she worked in various wards and many hospitals, and eventually became the manager of a nursing home before she retired.
And your dad, I know he was a big influence?
Yes. Yeah. My father was a professional negotiator, so he was responsible for negotiating collective bargaining agreements for various food companies across Canada and the United States, negotiating with all the big unions representing companies to arrive at employment arrangements for employees and contracts. So it was a big influence to me as well, because I, you know, growing up in a family where you have a professional negotiator, you tend to learn a lot about negotiating through your father.
What did you learn from him?
Well, it's the art of negotiating is really it's not a one-sided play. It's really trying to find a win-win solution. And it's also knowing the right timing to approach a negotiation, as well as, finding, ways to compromise potential both sides in order for you to get to an agreement. And for him, when I was younger, of course, not as well developed in my skill set, I can recall many instances where I would go in to demand something I wanted, whether it be, I remember my friends all wanting to get their scuba diving licenses when I was 14, and I was convinced this is what I needed and I wanted to do. And I went in as prepared as I could, and typical to many of my discussions with my father, he sat me down and asked me a series of questions. And within about a 20 minutes to a half hour, I was asking myself the same question: why did I want to do this? So he was very effective at getting to an outcome. But again, I think he always looked to try to find a win-win in negotiations for both sides.
And you have a reputation for being sort of a fixer. You've helped turn around two companies. The first one was an XL financial company that got into trouble, and you helped turn that around. And more recently, the last 6 years, you've been working on Ambac, turning that around. Can you tell us what has drawn you to take on these sort of fixer-upper companies?
Sure. Well, I probably characterize them more as transformation companies, and I really enjoy the transformation aspect, whether that's a company that's heavily distressed that we're trying to restructure and bring back to stability, or whether it's a company that's looking to pivot to growth orientation. Those transformations, I think, really excite me in terms of the challenge surrounding them. There's always a lot of creativity that's required, just significant complexity. And a lot of people would say, well, you know, the focus here, whether it's restructuring or growth, there's a lot of finance behind it, which I agree completely. But it's really more about the people, getting people to do things. In the case of restructurings that they said they wouldn't do previously, you're really trying to convince them to do something they said they would never do effectively. And when it comes to transforming companies to growth, you're trying to, you know, bring along people to believe in a common goal and join together to work as a team to position or reposition a company towards growth. So both are areas of interest to me. And yes, most recently, I guess at Cencora and at Ambac, I was involved in restructurings. And now at Ambac, of course, we're now transforming the company towards growth. And to me, that's as exciting. But yeah, the complexity, the challenge, the creativity are all aspects that I really enjoy. And I think the negotiating skills that my father shared with me as I grew up certainly have helped me in that regard to be more accomplished in the manners that I need to bring people together.
Could you give us an example of that?
Sure. Well, I think when I joined Ambac in January of 2017, I was trying to evaluate whether this was a platform that I felt I could bring value to and whether this was the right role, the right opportunity for me. And having just come off achieving something very similar at the XL subsidiary, I wanted to discuss, you know, the approach with various participants in the credit structure to understand where they were at and how they wanted to or how they saw the opportunity to move forward in terms of restructuring Ambac. And I think, first of all, I think the response I got was, one, you know, there was an interest to participate if I was going to be involved, given I had done it before. Of course, always helps to keep people interested. But secondly, I think people believe that, you know, my approach towards, you know, looking for a win-win solution such that, you know, they were going to benefit from the restructuring. They were going to benefit from the goals that we would put down together. Obviously, we're always looking to, in insurance, to address policyholder concerns and equity holders. But at the same time, to get, you know, creditors to do something that they hadn't done before, you're going to have to find a solution around that. So I think having the preliminary discussions around that and knowing that there was a belief that we could get there based on our prior experiences and engagements, there was that trust that existed. You know, I was immediately comforted by the fact that people said, yeah, we can do this and hear our thoughts. And that allowed us to really jump on the restructuring immediately when I joined Ambac. And within a little over a year, we had exited rehabilitation with our regulator and restructured, you know, the vast majority of the company in a relatively short period of time.
Can you tell us about that transformation with Ambac?
Ambac, when I joined, was heavily distressed. It was in a rehabilitation. They call it a partial rehabilitation in the state of Wisconsin, where the regulator was in our offices. And we really were working in large part for the regulator. And we had billions of dollars of creditors in our cap structure at various levels that were not getting paid. And the company was really not progressing. So we really started putting together a team of the top individuals within Ambac. And really, my approach to working and doing restructurings is to involve all the critical people that are needed to get to a conclusion, not just small independent meetings, but get everybody in a room. I think we're maybe 30 strong, to put together a plan that we would then present to our various stakeholders and regulators to get feedback necessary to assess, you know, what challenges and opportunities we would have to progress the restructuring. And once we had built up enough information and resources and we had a core team that we were able to assign responsibilities to, you know, we initiated the launch of our restructuring. And, you know, within the matter of, you know, 12 months, had materially progressed things such that we were approaching the regulator to bring this to court in order to exit our rehabilitation. Since then, we've continued to do restructuring transactions around various troubled credits that we had up until recently. Our largest one was Puerto Rico, which we're now exiting bankruptcy with Puerto Rico. And I'm very happy to see that, as it was our last significant remaining challenge exposure. And, you know, Ambac today, our legacy businesses are really progressed to a smooth, stable runoff position. We still have some work to do, but we're pretty well in that glide path and being able to really say that we've achieved the goals that we were looking to do. And now it's really all about, you know, now finding ways to extract that value for our equity holders. And that's the next step of the plan.
Can you tell us about what Ambec looks like today?
Sure. So we started the transformation to a new growth company back in early 2020, but it's something that we started planning at the very onset of my joining Ambec. And we had to, of course, start focusing initially on the restructuring and stabilization of our legacy business. But soon after that, we progressed our new business strategy in earnest and really launched it in early 2020, focused on the specialty P&C insurance space. Our core businesses in the specialty P&C space comprise of the Everspan Group, which is a participatory or hybrid fronting platform, which we launched in early 2020. It is an A-minus Class 8 carrier. We're up to 15 programs now, and the company is growing very strong. Very pleased with the progress we've made there. And we differentiate ourselves in the market by taking a risk retention as high as 30% on some programs, but really operating as a risk selector and really managing risks on behalf of ourselves and our reinsurers, which has worked very, very well for us. The second division is what we call Cirrata Group, is our insurance distribution division. And there we are involved in acquiring and starting de novo MGA and MGU businesses. So really insurance distribution with very strong, high-performing underwriting teams that are in MGAs that we believe will be successful both in the hard markets as well as the soft markets, and really progressing to build a federation model of distribution companies under Cirrata Group.
Can I take you back to that first day when you walked in the office at Ambec? You had a critical meeting.
Sure. The first day was an interesting day. I didn't know a single person at Ambec, other than, of course, having met the board a number of times, but I didn't know any members of management. So it was a big day, and I had numerous meetings back-to-back to attend with two separate boards, our holding company board and our operating company boards, as well as a regulator, and then, of course, a meeting with the employees. And I sat down with my management team, had a great conversation with them, but then we quickly moved into my first strategy discussion with our chairman and a couple members of my leadership team to discuss how we were going to move forward with the restructuring of our legacy business. And it was an interesting meeting because we had a lot of great ideas that were shared at a high level to determine how we were going to progress the initiatives. You know, we agreed that we were going to continue the dialogue and progress forward to have a meeting in the next couple of days to continue to see how we can progress the initiatives. And I said, well, absolutely, we're going to continue, but it won't be just the three or four of us in these meetings. We're going to bring in the entire team of individuals that we need collectively to solve for the challenges that we have. Because as great as leadership teams are in any organization, it really takes the people who understand the challenges, who work in the various disciplines day to day. And those teams really need to work together collectively to be able to come up with solutions and really come up with plans that are executable and we can present, propose, and negotiate with parties to try to progress. So the team environment, team atmosphere is very important to me. And that was the next meeting. And really starting at that second meeting going forward, we built an incredible momentum behind our team and a real atmospheric around finding collectively solutions that, you know, none of us could have done independently, and certainly the leadership team by itself could have never come up with by itself.
So when you're looking for solutions, it sounds like you're really good at strategy, which we'd spoken previously. There's a board game which has a strategy.
Well, I hate to say this. I don't say it too often, but I am the reigning champion of Othello. Maybe you didn't hear that, but I've actually never lost a game of Othello in my life. And I played with many adults even as a child and continue to win. So at this stage in my life, I try not to play in fear that I may bump into somebody someday that could take that away from me.
So it's funny you bring this up because I am also undefeated at Othello.
Really?
And if our listeners aren't familiar with us, it's a game called Go. From Asia. It's a little bit similar to that, but it's black and white tiles. And the idea is one player is black and one player is white. And you try to surround your player's tiles and flip them. And throughout the game, they will flip from black to white as you go until whoever fills out the board and has the most colors on the board will win. So what I'm curious about, Claude, is a game like that, it's black and white. Does that play in your strategy when you're negotiating? In insurance, it's a lot of negotiations, isn't it?
Yeah, listen, I think there are black and white issues that we have to deal with, or gating issues that we have to address, and understanding the gating issues for both sides are critical to strategy, understanding your opponent, and understanding how you're going to get to a solution. But I think really it's more of a rainbow, because I think once you get through the issues that are need to haves or must haves, it's really moving into, well, what else can we do to provide or create solutions that perhaps address the majority of certain concerns, or as a basket provide enough value to one side, whether it's a regulator that you're negotiating certain concessions, or it could be a counterparty that you're trying to negotiate some sort of concession or a growth strategy with a partner. They all involve various key components and other softer components. So I always look at the negotiation as certainly first and foremost, understand the must-haves on both sides, but then also focus a lot on the other points that may be softer, but maybe collectively as valuable, potentially even more valuable than some of the gating issues when you look at it as a whole.
Before you took the job at AmBeck, you made a number of calls to the debtors. And I think that's a good example of how you negotiate. Can you tell us about that experience?
Sure. Well, in evaluating whether, AmBeck was going to be the right place, and in evaluating how and to what degree I wanted to assess how quickly I could effectuate change, I really wanted to go back to have conversations with some of the key creditors in the AmBeck cap structure to understand where they were positioned and their thoughts on potentially re-engaging to see whether we could all move forward to find a solution, as the company had really been not progressing for some time. So I reached out to a few of these significant creditors and hedge funds to discuss with them, my involvement with AmBeck, to see if that would be something that they would, how they would welcome it, and whether I could count on them to roll up their sleeves and pick up their pens to see whether we could move forward together. And I was very pleased to hear that, having known a number of these creditors for a number of years, and having developed a level of trust and credibility with them, negotiating outcomes that were good for both sides, that they were willing to put in the effort with no promises, but said, we'll go back, we will roll up our sleeves and prepare to engage with you. So I think that was one of the key thresholds that I needed to get through to evaluate whether I would join AmBeck, and whether I thought I could be effective in the leadership of the in restructuring of the legacy business. And once I got through that, I was locked in and ready to move forward. So it was really getting through that initial stage, or maybe the last stage, to confirm that, I at least had parties on the other side that were willing to really engage and work with us to try to get something done.
What is the key to negotiating?
I think it depends on the nature of the negotiation and the strength of the opponents within a negotiation. But I think there are some common things that I always look for. Understanding what the need to have components are for each side, understanding the landscape of other potential value that exists that both sides can appreciate, and really trying to find a solution that really addresses the need to have and the like to haves in a way that is comprehensive. I tend not to negotiate one-off issues with creditors or around anything that's holistic around restructuring, transformational items. I really want to understand the full package and build towards a comprehensive package of value that we can exchange, where there's enough value seen on both sides that the parties can come together to a consensual agreement. So I think it's and really understanding the other party, and sometimes that takes a lot of time, a lot of patience, a lot of questions, a lot of information to digest and review. Like anything else, it is about the people involved in the negotiation. The financial matters clearly are critical that we need to get through, and the key deal points, but you really need people that are willing to engage and try to find out where there's common ground and try to work towards a solution to get to a settlement.
A quick break to talk about this episode's sponsor, Emergen. Emergen offers learning, consulting, and technology services to help clients own their transformation and create high-performing teams. For more information, visit their website, emergen.com. That's E-M-E-R-G-N.com. So what do you like about the insurance industry?
You know, I love the business in that it is a people's business. It really is all about the people. I also find it a very interesting industry in that it really sits in the middle of almost anything economically, political, environment, you know, anything you read about in the newspaper every day, it will have some impact in some part of insurance. So it's a local industry as much as it is a global industry. And I really enjoy the people aspect to it. I think that's probably the key driver and interest that I have.
If there is anything you could change about the industry, what would it be?
Well, I think, you know, this is probably something that's been said by many. I think many are also trying to find solutions around this, but it's really to try to develop approaches that are more forward-looking in risk assessment, more forward-looking in terms of maybe finding solutions to mitigate risks. And, you know, there are many new technologies and initiatives that have been launched or through partnerships or individually through insurance companies to predict things like, you know, the effects of climate change as an example, or, you know, assessments of risks surrounding cyber risk, which is a real area of focus right now as people are trying to develop strategies and entry points into cyber risk insurance. And I'd like to see the industry continue to build and really explore these, you know, proactive, forward-looking assessments of risk to better understand risk.
Now, you took a personal interest in climate change and to take a proactive steps in setting up a scholarship at your alma mater.
Well, you know, I view, first of all, I'm a big supporter of education and always have been. I do view it as the great equalizer of society and something that I, you know, I view as very important. And I spend a lot of time with people, you know, coaching on careers and education, as well as contributing through sitting on my Dean's Advisor Council. So it's a big interest to me, education as a starting point. But as I looked at, you know, things that are taking place in our world, and again, coming back to the insurance industry, you know, I think, you know, I was trying to find an area, a scholarship that would have a very meaningful impact to society, but also, you know, a big impact that was important to me. So I really focus on climate change because I do believe climate change to be probably the biggest challenge that we face as a modern human race and the biggest change agent to capital movement that has already taken place and will continue to take place in the coming decades. And if you are a young person, you know, approaching your college days and looking to see what does the future look like, where are job opportunities, where are areas of interest that could interest me, you know, I think climate change is, you know, is bigger than the internet. It's bigger than some of the biggest changes that we've had or seen in the past in our lifetimes. So climate change was the area that I focused on, and I sponsored a scholarship that was focused on attracting students who would like to focus on entrepreneurial program focus on finding solutions to climate change.
Great. If I could turn back to the program business, which Everspan is so involved in. If you remember, as a number of decades ago, maybe the 80s, 90s, a number of companies got into trouble for, it was called giving away the pen. They gave the program administrators too much control, and they ended up writing poor business, and a number of companies became insolvent. Is that a danger with so much growth in that area today?
I strongly believe it is. And there are many, you know, new MGAs, MGUs, people with pens who are launching businesses. And we've seen a large number of startups. You know, we are very selective in the way we critically evaluate MGAs and agents. As I mentioned earlier, we're really focused on not only companies that can do well in today's hard market, but also, you know, through the whole market cycle. And for that, it requires discipline. It requires strong underwriting discipline and tools. And it's also a cultural aspect in terms of how people think about risk. Whether that risk you're underwriting is on your balance sheet or on somebody else's. You know, I don't think the two are really independent, because if you're writing on somebody else's balance sheet, your business will not succeed if you're not underwriting profitably. So I think for us, it really is a critical evaluation of the teams, the underwriting discipline, and really the culture of the leadership team. And when we do new program business at Everspan, as an example, we have a very involved diligence process we go through, and we're highly selective. I think as of today, I think we now have 15 programs on our books, and that's after evaluating over 400 programs that we've seen submissions for, just to give an example.
And what's next for Ambac?
So at Ambac, and we're very excited about the strategies that we have launched, both on the hybrid fronting platform as well as the insurance distribution. And I think our goals are really to continue to scale both of these platforms into strong market leadership positions as we continue to build out our platform. We're, of course, also going to focus on trying to crystallize the value from our legacy businesses to redeploy that capital also into the new business segments that we have. So for now, it's all, we've got a strategy, we're locked in, and we're it's all about execution at this point.
Great. Claude, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Maggie. It was my pleasure.
In this episode, I learned how Claude used his negotiation skills to turn around Ambac Financial. He listened to what the other side wanted and found a way for both sides to win. He also believes in the strength of teamwork. I also learned not to challenge him to a game of Othello. For more information about property casualty insurers, please visit our website, insiderengage.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, please tell your friends. And you can register on our website to be notified of future episodes when we'll speak to another industry leader to share their insight and their story of how they rose to the C-suite. Thanks to Claude LeBlanc for sharing his story with us today, for our producer Lindsay Riley at Earshot Strategies for always making us sound good, and my Euromoney colleagues Celine Frost, Kareem Magero, Michelle Heatherly, Emma May, Goran Panzik, and Pierre Agavala for their help and support. For Insider Engage, I'm Meg Green. Thanks to our partner Emergen for supporting our podcast. Emergen is a global digital business services firm with a mission to improve the way people and companies work forever. For more information, visit their website, emergen.com. That's EMERGN.com.